They came from across North America. The Endless Talker, the Horror Host, the Canadian Web Slinger,
the Comic Book Clergyman.
They meet here in the basement of an abandoned comic book shop for one purpose and one purpose only: to drink from the water cooler of stories and talk about comic books. This is Tales from the Water Cooler.
So welcome everybody to this week's Tales from the Water Cooler.
Water cooler!
Water cooler!
This isn't Monsters and Metal.
Oh, crap. Okay, wrong show. Sorry.
Wrong show. Let's start over.
Okay.
With us this week we have...
Non-Infinite Speech.
And Spider-Man Geek.
The Clergyman of Death!
And Decapitated Dan. I'd say what's going on, but Jeff, I don't care.
Okay, so I have to give you a little bit of a spoiler. I took my kids to go see Monsters University the other day, and there's this hilarious scene where there's this mom, and you know, because it's all they're all monsters, you know. So like there's like this mom in the cast, and their fraternity lives in like this guy's mom's house, and she gets stuck driving them somewhere because none of them have a car, and so they all leave the car, and she's sitting there, and she says, "I'll just be sitting here listening to my tunes," and she rolls up the window, and she turns on the radio, and it goes. And she has this look on her face like she's so content. But anyway, I thought of you. It was so funny. Yeah.
That's funny, because anyway. I'll just drive around the car if I have kids listening to it. I'll be one of those people who are videotaping the back seat going, "This is how you headbang the Slayer." Oh, man. All right, so how was everybody's week? Dan, let's start with you, because Jeff's going to tell us a great story, so.
How was my week? Well, we had lots of barbecues this weekend, so that was fun. Barbecue at my brother's and some fireworks, because over on the Quebec side, they celebrate Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day. So it's kind of like their provincial holiday celebration. So
they
it's Barbecue
Day.
What's that?
Betrock Zilliper Day.
Yeah, Betrock the Zilliper, yes. So we celebrate the frogs. And we eat the frog's legs, and they are delicious. That was basically it. Just, you know, lots of barbecue and drinking, and that's it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. It's hot, too. We got a bit of a heat wave going on here.
Nice. Mm. I didn't do nothing. Ooh. I went to 78 degrees.
It's totally 62.
It's sweltering 59.
Don't they use Celsius up there, though?
Yes, we do.
Oh, so we don't even know what it means, Jeff. It's beyond us.
Right.
It's like 36 degrees Celsius.
It's 36 degrees Celsius?
What is that Fahrenheit?
It's about, I don't know, 89, 90, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. That's a burner.
They must all think they're going to burn to death. Hell's a coming.
It's 44 with the Humidex. That feels like bullshit.
Too funny.
36 feels like 44. Yeah, it's actually closer to 100. 36 is closer to 100. It's 97.
Wow. That's hotter than it is here. Interesting.
Global warming in Canada.
Yeah, I guess so. So what were you saying, Decapitated?
I was going to say, I found these pretty cool finds at a thrift store. I found this Joker. Did you guys see pictures of this? This Joker sketchbook?
No.
I found? Oh, it's just this blank sketchbook, completely empty. There's a few pages torn out, so there is that. It even has one of those ribbon page markers in there, so you know you can just pull on it and turn to the page you want. But it's got the Joker on the front, laughing, and on the back it has the Joker logo. So I sold it to a friend who's going to get it full, filled with sketches, Joker sketches.
Nice.
So that was cool. And I also found this really cool hardcover Batman book that has four adventure stories for level 3 reading. I don't know what that means. But pretty cool book. Good finds. Good finds. Especially for the price you pay for them.
Speaking of good finds, my wife found me the Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy on VHS. The untouched.
Open? Was it still sealed?
No. Untouched, like non-Lucas tampered with the non-special edition versions. So like the original versions.
I had
the one where Han shot first.
Yes, the one with Lopty neck. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Lopty neck. Sorry.
I had those because my dad recorded them off of HBO when we were younger.
Nice.
You could have asked.
Oh, well, I didn't know I wanted it. She got it for $1. It said 50 cents on it, but when she took it up to the counter, the manager said, "That's actually marked wrong. It's supposed to be $1." And so
she didn't fight for it?
No, she didn't. It was still just $1, so.
You gotta fight for bargains. You gotta be like, "That's your mistake. Now it's 25 cents."
Right.
That's how we do it in Chicago.
That's right. You fight for what you want. Not, we're not down in the South going, "Oh, you won't put that up to $2? It's okay."
Let's go grab a sarsaparilla.
I don't even know what a sarsaparilla is. That's what makes that so funny. Never even had one. That's great.
The funny thing is I haven't either, but I bet you Dan has.
No, I haven't.
He grew up going, "Man, I gotta get some sarsaparilla."
Sarsaparilla.
All I've ever wanted was a sarsaparilla. Let me go get a belly washer.
Mmm, that's sassy. Oh, Christ. All right. We don't want to spoil any of the fun to come, but we definitely want to have Jeff regale us with the tale of the Man of Steel.
So I went to go see the midnight showing of The Man of Steel.
Midnight on the opening night or midnight on just another night?
On opening night. I was away. I was at a conference, and a buddy of mine and I, you know, we just decided to go at the last minute. And, you know, so we went. And and if you really want to see kind of what I think about it, I wrote a new column at Comic Attack.
.net,
and you can see all that stuff. But there were so what I will cover here is not what I will cover there in terms of what I didn't like about that movie. But this movie was just awful, and there were so many just completely idiotic things. For instance, so I'm going to spoil this. Okay, so if you have seen all the controversy online, the fanboys who are, you know, all upset or whatever, or the ones who loved it, whatever. I'm just gonna spoil this, but so there's this great scene where Clark, as a boy, saves this bus full of kids, and but one of the kids, which is like this fat kid, and I think it's supposed to be Pete Ross. Anyway, he sees him or whatever, and then his mom takes him over to the Kent house and is like, "Your son saved all the kids," and Clark's like out in the yard and he's like moping about it, and basically Kevin Costner's Pa Kent just goes on and on about how, you know, this guy, you know, he can't save kids because the government will take him away, and because he's an alien they will, you know, they'll do all this stuff. And so it's just, so basically the gist is that, you know, Pa Kent wanted him to just let the whole bus full of kids just drown in order to save a secret. So so that was one thing that was just kind of like, what? And then it takes it even further, and stupid Pa Kent is arguing with Clark in the car, and then this tornado comes out of nowhere, because that happens in Kansas all the time, you know? And then...
It was a bright, sunny day, and then all of a sudden...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they were just driving down the road, and all of a sudden this huge tornado shows up. And then the stupid dog gets locked in the car, and so, you know... Kevin Costner's like, oh, I gotta go save the dog, which, you know, if I'm staring at a tornado, the dog is dead. There's no dogs, no more dog. And but instead, you know, he goes back to you know, get the dog. Somehow a car, like a truck, falls on the car and he gets trapped, and then he wiggles himself out and he's like, finally, like, he's okay. And Clark's just standing there the whole time thinking to himself, you know, he's got to be thinking, you know, I can run at super fast speed, I can save you and the dog and everybody else here in a heartbeat, but like, just to keep his secret, Kevin Costner just slowly lifts his hand and kind of waves goodbye, and then the tornado picks him up and like takes him away. And there was a part where I really wanted, like, at the end of the movie, like years later, for Pocket to come flying, flying butt naked into the scene. Oh, I'm alive! But it didn't happen. So, but yeah,
he comes just... floating in on the hot air balloon. He goes, "You'll never believe what's on the other side of the rainbow."
I am awesome. But yeah, no, it was just a lot of lameness in the movie, and the whole, you know, grim and gritty kind of take on Superman and the end of the movie. It just didn't work for me. It was
when he shows up for the first time in his as Superman. Does he go, "I'm Superman"?
No, but here's a funny thing. So the suit is actually Kryptonian underwear. Because, like, in the earlier scene, when they go to Krypton, I mean, in the early part of the movie, it takes place on Krypton and what's going on in Jor-El and all this stuff. And, like, he takes off his battle armor, and underneath is basically the Superman suit, only it's, like, a black version. And he ends up, you know, long story short, Jor-El shows up in a hologram to show Clark kind of who he is. And they're, like, walking around this spaceship, and all of a sudden he's just like, oh, look, here's a Kryptonian closet, and he like opens it up, and there's the Superman suit, all, you know, and it's basically just underwear with a cape on, because it's not the awesome battle gear that they were wearing on Krypton. It's just the underwear.
What is the S then?
The S,
stands for hope. That.
It stands for hope. It's not an S. It's just a squiggle that stands for hope in Kryptonian language.
But here's my question. How did Jor-El know the exact size Clark was going to grow up to be?
Exactly.
How did Jor-El talk to him? Have an actual... They had an actual conversation when he's a hologram,
I didn't,
right?
Even have a superhero suit. Like, I just... that part was so stupid. There were a lot of little things like that that just...
The
you
problem
know,
is, it doesn't sound like they're little things. It sounds like they're big things.
Like the main thing I was reading about that sort of bothered me was the part where they're saying these world destruction engines and Superman actually goes out into the middle of the Atlantic to go destroy that one when there's nobody fucking around, and there's one smack dab in the middle of Metropolis. He doesn't go save that one where he could save millions of people. No, he goes out in the Atlantic Ocean.
The wanton destruction in this movie is just amazing. It's like seriously, I was counting the number of buildings. First, they destroy they destroy Smallville first. Like, the downtown of Smallville is just obliterated because of one fight. And then later on, there are buildings just falling everywhere in this movie. And like, to me, it's like, okay, we now live in a post 9/11 society. We know what a building, like, how much destruction a building will do when a building falls. And in this movie, it's just like they just fall. And they're just showing all the terror on everybody's faces. Like, I mean, it's not like they're saying, oh, all these buildings were empty. Like, they could have just put a little clip in there that said, we've successfully evacuated all of Metropolis. But they didn't do that. They were just like, nope, you know, buildings are just falling, people are dying, it's just awful, and Superman is just, you know, fighting Zod, keeps fighting Zod the whole time. He doesn't, like, fly him up into space or take him out into the ocean. I mean, he doesn't do any of that. He's just, you know, and then the only sign of kind of remorse is after Superman kills Zod, which I had a huge problem with, he goes, no! And that was it. And that was it. And then, like, 2 seconds later, which is the very end of the movie, like, he gets a job at the Daily Planet. And it was like, wink, wink, I've got glasses. You can't tell who I am. it really was that stupid.
Nice.
After all of the destruction, like 9/11 times 20, and he's like, I got a job.
So. And he sounds like John Travolta, apparently.
All right. Well, while we're still waiting, let's go ahead and start some Jeopardy here.
Jeez, you gotta warn me before. Oh, hold on.
Hey, we're gonna start Jeopardy now.
All right.
Such a tight groove. Such a tight groove.
All right, we'll start the furthest away from speech this week. So Dan, you go. You give yours to Jeff first.
Mine to Jeff first. All right. I hope you're good with years and
years trivia.
But that's okay. I threw in some historical events to help you out.
What are primary colors?
What are they? All have. Two ears.
All right. First answer. Okay, so the category is please allow me to introduce myself. So basically what I'm looking for is the year that these characters were introduced.
Okay. I suck at
this. All right.
Okay.
All right. Zorn, Ultimate Nick Fury, and Dupe. Let me know if you need a hint.
Hint?
We'll say... 2000.
All right, you get a half point because you're close. It's 2001.
Okay. Hey, whoa!
What? Oh, yay! Half point. He said it. It counts.
How do I draw half a line? Seriously?
You just go up halfway.
Yeah. Okay.
And that was also the year that Wikipedia was launched on the internet.
Wow.
All right. Dark Child, Painkiller Jane, and Onslaught.
1996.
Very good. And see where we're going there? From 2000 to 96. So the next one, John Constantine, Strong Guy, and Casey Jones.
1983?
Close. 85.
Hey!
If
do I not exist in this game?
No, he has. It's just me and Jeff.
Jeez, I could have got that one. Thanks.
All right. Dan?
No. It only goes to me if he gets it wrong.
Okay. Next one, maybe you'll get it. Garfield. Okay, I can never say this properly. Quasar?
1978.
And Clayface.
Is he right?
1978.
Yes, he's correct.
The only reason I know that is because that's the year I was born.
It's the year I was born.
And I just knew that because of Garfield.
It was a good year.
It was a very good year.
All right.
When's your birthday?
November.
Oh, okay. I'm older than you.
Yeah, you are.
June 3rd. Yep. Okay.
Okay. Oh, last but not least, Betty Ross, Barbarella, and Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Who was the first one?
Betty Ross.
I will say 1965.
Dan?
1969.
It's also the same year as the Cuban Missile Crisis.
No one? 63. 62. 64. Oh,
62. 62? Okay.
62.
All right, Jeff.
All right. My category is Get in My Belly!
Nice.
Ready?
What
are you ready?
Sausage. Hold on, wait. All right. Wait, hold on. I'm getting a text. It might be time.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right, he's probably out for the whole show. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, all right. This lard-ass mutant ate Janet Van Dyne in the Ultimate Universe and not in the pleasant way.
Who is the blob?
Correct. This overweight warrior doth flatulate in the maw of many frost giants.
Say it again?
This overweight warrior doth flatulate in the maw of many frost giants.
It's one of those Warrior 3 guys I don't know.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Who is Volstagg?
I'll take my half point.
Yeah, you'll get that one. Volstagg.
That shouldn't... Okay.
Okay. This corpulent crime boss crushes Daredevil, Spider-Man, and the Punisher on a regular basis.
Who is the Kingpin?
Yeah. All right, now it's going to get hard. You're not going to get this.
That's what she said.
Yep. This Man Mountain is an immortal weapon who can't beat Iron Fist. If you listen to the COC, you would know this.
Iron Fist. Who is the fat guy?
Close. Who is Fat Dan? Cobra?
Correct. Very good. This, okay, Decapitated Dan, this tubby teen was a leaping member of the Legion of Superheroes.
Legion of Superheroes. Tubby teen. Who is Shazam? Billy Bastion.
No.
Okay.
That's not even a thing.
What?
Billy Bastion is not a name of anyone.
Are you sure?
Billy Batson.
Batson? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
All right, Dan.
DC. I don't know. It's probably some super obvious name, like, who is obese overweight lad?
I should give that to you just for creativity. But no, the answer was, who is Bouncing Boy?
Bouncing Boy
was his name, yes.
All right. Okay, Dan. The category is anything you can do, I can do better. Mm. Your example, I can't talk today. Your example is Wolverine would be like Ripclaw, okay?
Gotcha.
Okay, so you could say he and Clinton Barton are twins, except for that he is in the DC Universe.
Who is Green Arrow?
Correct. These two cosmic forces are very similar in nature, but one uses headgear while the other chose jewelry.
Don't know.
Jeff?
Who is Nova?
And?
I don't know.
Oh.
And Green Lantern.
Yes.
I got you.
That was the only one that would have had two things. Okay. Dan, Gorgon may be a member of DC's extremist, but he sure resembles this Marvel villain.
Who is Gorgon?
Correct. I didn't think you were going to get that one.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of Gorgon, Jeff?
Not the DC version.
Me either. Just the Marvel version.
Really?
Yeah, it was a total guess.
All right, we all know that Ted Salas and Alec Holland are very similar, but this character actually predates them both.
Oh, crap, what's that? Yeah.
Who is the Flash?
No.
No. Oh, crap, we read it for the cooler once. The Heat.
Correct.
Who is the Heat? Yeah.
All right, last one, Dan. Mm-hmm. Because we needed more dinosaurs in our comics, Marvel created the Savage Land, while DC created this.
What is the Lost World?
No.
What is Dinosaur Valley?
Close. Dinosaur Island. Dinosaur
Island.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Then I was even remotely close.
All right, with the big ass-kicking this week, Jeff has...
Woo!
12 and a half points.
Woo!
Nice.
Dan, you had 8. I had 6. So
yes, healed before Jeff.
Nobody's gonna answer Gids because I don't know if you guys can hear every single time he texts me, but it's getting annoying. So with that, let's do it. Let's dive into this week's picks.
Wee! What the fuck is Gids? Flash.
All right, up first this week we have, let's see, we're skipping good. So, Dan's pick, what'd you pick?
I picked Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 24.
Spider-Man No More continues. Can Miles return to being Spider-Man after everything that's happened? There's a new band of superheroes in town. What is Ultimate Power Pack? Written by Brian.
What?
Written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by David Marquez.
Ultimate Power Pack? Are you kidding me?
Good. That's not in the solicit, is it?
It is.
Really? It is. What the? Oh man.
Wait, here's the even better part. It says Spider-Man No More continues, right? And then there's an exclamation point. But Spider-Man No More is all caps and continues is all lowercase. And then there's an exclamation point.
That's good.
Yeah, good writing.
I like it.
Good editing.
Okay, we reviewed issue 23 a few weeks ago on the water cooler. I didn't particularly like it. I mean, I don't have much invested in the Ultimate Universe. I don't have much invested in Ultimate Spider-Man. But the fun thing about this issue is that it's not about Ultimate Spider-Man at all. I don't like Cloak and Dagger in the 616. I think they are lame characters.
What?
They are lame characters.
You're a lame character.
but I found this issue extremely interesting, actually. I don't know how much... Well, I'm pretty sure that their origin, how it's fleshed out in here, is completely different than the 616 version, although I never really bothered to find out in the 616. All right, you do that. So, you know, the shot opens basically where we left off on issue 23. Cloak and Dagger have just appeared in front of the Chinese restaurant where Miles was eating, and they're fighting Ultimate Bombshell. The scenes are pretty good. Like, oh, man. Like, Dave Marquez's art is just fantastic. Especially Dagger. She just looks awesome in every panel she's in. The level of detail is totally amazing. So, anyways, we flash back to about a year ago where I forget their name. Tandy and...
Cloak
Ty.
And Dagger.
Ty.
Just Cloak and Dagger.
Yes. Cloak and Dagger, where they first meet. So they've only known each other for a year. But, you know, love blossomed. So we go through a little bit of that, how they met and how their relationship evolved in a couple of pages, but enough to give you something to go on. Then we cut back to the fight, which is awesome. I mean, it's a superhero fight, and it's kind of fun because you see it in the perspective, more of the perspective of Miles, you know, where he's basically telling Gwen to shut up. She's like, why aren't you just changing and going out there? And so he's wrestling with himself, and he's narrating, and you hear his interior monologue. He really doesn't want his dad to find out. He doesn't want to be Spider-Man, so he's just an onlooker at this point. And then we see Cloak do some cool shit. He does what he does best, and he, you know, cloaks. so Bombshell ends up inside of him. That was dirty.
Mm.
But what I really liked here, and I don't know how much Dave Marquez was involved in doing this little design, but it's the whole smoke effect coming out of Cloak's cloak is just really awesome on panel here. You know, and of course you can tell that these are they're new with their superpowers. They don't quite know what they're doing. The panel where Bombshell explodes out of Cloak is just phenomenal. I wish it was a bigger panel. That should have almost been a two-page spread. But and then we cut back again to some flashback, and this is where we get more of the actual origin of how they got their powers. You know, Michael Bendis here, he gives you just enough to go on. There's still a lot of questions left once the issue is over. So of course it's going to continue on to Ultimate Spider-Man number 25, where I assume we're going to have more revealed to us about who Cloak and Dagger are. But I thought it was a great setup where you still have the mystery about these characters at the end, and it's just enough. he gives you just enough to care about them, in my opinion. And again, just a treat to the eyes, this entire book. Every panel, every scene is just so high in detail and well drawn, so good job to the artist. And I just loved reading it, and all the dialogue and banter is just really good. And again, I loved it because Miles isn't in it. So over to you, Jeff.
Yeah, this is a great issue. This was my number two pick. It was just so good, and mainly because Dave Marquez, like you said, he is quickly becoming my favorite artist. He's so good, and I just love that. I just love this whole issue. I like the way that Bendis kind of tells the story. I like that we kind of took a little bit of focus away from Miles and went into the story of Cloak and Dagger. And I was a little disappointed because in the telling of their origin, mainly because because their 616 origin is basically they took drugs and that's how it triggered their mutant powers. So basically, I just thought that was always kind of funny how it was drugs that turned them into Cloak and Dagger. I just thought it was a cool origin, but this is a little more. There's something more sinister going on here, and we have a little cabal of doctors that I don't know if we've seen in the Ultimate Universe before. But you've got Layla Miller. You've got Nathaniel Essex, otherwise known as Mr. Sinister. You got Samuel Stearns, also known as the leader, and Arnim Zola the Third. I don't know how that connects to the regular Arnim Zola, but these folks are like kidnapping.
He's his grandson.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Okay. Yeah, I didn't get that.
he doesn't know. He's bullshitting you.
He's so, the third.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So anyway, I meant like, anyway, if this was like the Arnim Zola, or if this was like a whatever. Anyway, the grandson. So the fact that they're somehow involved in kind of creating Cloak and Dagger, and maybe other heroes or villains too, I think that's an intriguing idea. You know, like you said, the effect on Cloak was really cool. I like the new I like the ultimate designs that Marquez has done here. I like that there was just enough Miles to kind of keep you engaged. Like, I don't like when they just kind of go in a completely different direction and don't show anything that's going on with the main character. So this was just enough, and with the drama with Gwen, that was really nice. And overall, this is just a really solid issue. I mean, this book we've talked about a million times, and it continues to be absolutely amazing. So, what'd you think, Decap?
Well, I think there's a reason why people don't read the Daily Bugle. Jesus, that's the worst laid out freaking newspaper I've ever seen.
Says the graphic designer.
that's just absolutely horrible. I like Cloak and Dagger. I like Cloak and Dagger ever since they show up in Runaways. So I enjoy them now that I know them. I've never gone back and read the older stuff, and I don't care to. I like how everybody works at the Kermit restaurant in this book.
Yeah.
Which I can't think of the name of, but I thought that was funny. And don't you also think it's funny that as soon as Cloak and Dagger die, Miles and Gwen are going to become the new Cloak and Dagger?
Oh, I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, you know, blonde chick and black dude. I didn't even think about that.
Panel layouts by Marquez are amazing, and it all really comes down to that two-page spread where Dagger's throwing the daggers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really landed it, like as something different that would stand out with the artwork, because I really enjoyed that. I don't get the mix of the doctors. The only one that makes sense to me is Sinister being there. I don't understand Layla being there, but I don't read X-Factor.
Yeah, I don't either.
So that doesn't make
sense. She's not a doctor.
So, no, overall, great issue. I really love the pages towards the end when the Cloak and Dagger wake up after they've been injected, and the darkness and then the light come out of them. I think those are great panels. And then, of course, you have this fantastic ending, and it's good. It's good filler while Miles figures stuff out, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is a way to put it. But yeah, at a certain point, you know, I guess the tornado's got to take his dad, and then he'll pull his shit together.
But no, you made a good point there, because if they move too quickly to him jumping back in the suit, then it would take away from the whole from his whole morning. So they really needed Bendis needed to write kind of a filler issue to make sure that Miles wasn't in the suit too quick.
Right. I just hope we don't end up with like a new. He already did the Super Friends stuff with Torch and Iceman. I just don't want to see that turn into this. But you know what? The Power Pack's coming. So, as we learned in the solicit,
the Power Pack's coming. What that means.
So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and rate it. I will give Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 24 9.
I too will give it a 9.
And I will give it an 8.5. Up next is Jess Pick. What'd you pick?
Indestructible Hulk. What number?
9.
Number 9.
Guest starring Daredevil! The secret of the friendship between Matt Murdock. Oh, wait, let me read this again. The secret of friendship between Matt Murdock and Bruce Banner! Oh, wait, here we go. It gets better with the. It's so short, but you guys ready for this? Hulk on the witness stand?
Old comicsology.
Written.
Just make stuff up! Just make it up.
Written by Mark Waid, art by Matteo Scalara.
They're like, okay.
Now, Matt Murdock's in here.
They're like, can we do to make to just throw off the audience completely? He's a lawyer, so let's say that this is gonna be like a trial of the Incredible Hulk kind of thing. So anyway. No, actually what's great about this issue is that there's nobody's going to court.
And Walt Simonson's nowhere to be found.
And yes, exactly. That's what's fantastic. Finally, we're a little bit back on course, I think, after that horrible Frost Giant thing that happened, which I still don't even understand. I mean, I don't even understand the story. I mean, I don't know what was going on, but that whole arc was weird. But this is a little back to normalcy. And as we know, Mark Waid is doing a pretty darn good job over on Daredevil, so it just makes sense to have Daredevil and Hulk on these two books that he writes team up. But we find out that Matt Murdock is Bruce Banner's lawyer, and which is very interesting considering that Bruce is now working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's being a little bit blackmailed into working for them. I mean, not blackmailed really, but they're using him. They're using the Hulk to clean up messes and to do things that, you know, that are kind of shady. And they're in exchange for Bruce being able to have a lab and to work in the lab and create things and that kind of thing. So in this issue, we get some nice, tension between Bruce and Maria Hill, which I'm really liking that dynamic. I like that there's just this constant kind of pull in their relationship, and then she kind of tricks him and into thinking that they need Bruce, but actually, you know, that, you know, she, you know, she plays a trick and he turns into Hulk and whatever. And so anyway, he goes and falls in and starts laying the smackdown on these red guys. And really the other thing that, you know, you guys may not like, but I thought was kind of cool was Daredevil is also kind of there to kind of just keep tabs on Hulk and make sure that he doesn't like kill somebody, because, you know, that could spell trouble for him and all of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s plans and Bruce's plans. And so while it played out a little hokey, it still turned out pretty cool. And at the end we get a nice, we get an actual team up of Hulk, Daredevil trying to, you know, figure out what's going on here. And I love the little scene where Daredevil walks into the bar and, you know, everybody pulls a gun, and then Hulk like rips open the door and everybody's like, oh my God, and drops everything. So that was kind of cool.
And then the priest and the rabbi turned around and left.
Yeah, exactly. Matteo Scalera, I think
he didn't get it at all.
No, I know. I know what I said. That Daredevil and Hulk walk in a bar. I get it. It's just been funny. Anyway, so Matteo Scalera is. I've been enjoying his work since Secret Avengers, and I think he's a great fit for this book. I like his style, It's a little sketchy and loose, and I really like that. So this is a great. This is just back on track. We're good to go with Indestructible Hulk. So yeah.
Okay. That's what I think. I think the funniest thing about this book is that the only thing that changed for three issues was a writer. Or the artist, right? Yet those three issues were horrible.
Yes, they were.
What happened? Was Mark Waid like, oh, I better play with this guy's shit. We better get Thor involved in this. Something like that, right?
Because it seems completely editorially mandated.
How does the writing drop from how good it was to just really dumb and kooky to now everything is perfectly fine again? It that makes no sense at all. So okay, with this issue, we're bringing Daredevil. I care less about Daredevil being there. I didn't really care for like the Hulk Daredevil stuff when he was saying, you know, well, you gotta learn how to talk to him. Oh, be good, Hulk. Stuff like that. It's like really, that made no sense to me. It was that was kind of stupid. The other thing I thought, just in general, was just stupid. Was really this guy magically got off the boat, where God only knows how he got out because he had to go up. He couldn't go down. He was already underwater. So he gets off the boat and he goes to Hell's Kitchen. Really? He goes to Hell's Kitchen? He goes to this 3-block radius that has been pointed out by speech. It's this, whatever. So whatever. You know, Daredevil's blind. He's got to have a small area to protect. No, Daredevil's still lame. I will say that, but like I said, the book got back to the action. My favorite thing though is just that final panel. Absolutely love that. I can't wait to see what comes out of that. But everything up until there, it was a good issue, and it is getting it back on track. I did kind of lose art wise. I did kind of lose track of exactly what was going on when they were in the bar and he shot the gun off. Because then he's outside freaking out, and he's like, oh, wait a minute, I got a note. Oh, I get to go here now.
It was like a sonic gun.
Right, but did the whole building collapse on everybody?
Sure. Didn't matter.
That's what I was getting confused on. I was like, wait, because there's the panel of him laying there saying, run, go. But who's he saying that to? Because the way it looks like an action shot where the building's collapsing onto him.
Uh-huh.
And then it just transitions into, yeah, whatever, I got my shit back together, I'm gonna go see this dude over here. So that's all I took away from that. This is just one thing in the art I didn't care for, but I like the issue. Good stuff. So Dan.
Yeah, I had that same problem with that 2-page spread. It seemed to have jumped, like there was something missing, and it was just really weird that all of a sudden like Hulk's running after you and the building collapses, then you're like, oh yeah, there's this note in my pocket, and yeah, it was a bit confusing on what was going on there. But otherwise, I'm extremely happy that this book is getting back on track. So, you know, once again, it's Bruce Banner dealing with S.H.I.E.L.D. and dealing with the way that
Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice message.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm back. Did everybody miss me?
Welcome back.
We have no idea. I have no idea what Dan said.
All right. Where did you lose me?
Kind of, you said the word S.H.I.E.L.D. and then speech text and said, call me. So, right. I lost
you. So are you calling him? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to get him on. You just keep going. I lost you because I hit the wrong thing. That's all.
Okay. So, we get to, you know, we're back on track where Bruce Banner is, you know, using S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D. is using Banner, and there's that whole rapport there, that whole tension, and so there's, you know, that's fun. I think that's a neat aspect of this book so far. You know, and then you have Maria Hill freaking out when he's using the cell phone, and he's like, oh, I designed this, like, last week or whatever. It's
hello.
That's Banner's cell phone.
Bruce?
There.
Bruce? Dan, keep going. He'll figure out where we're at.
Okay. So, yeah, and then of course Matt Murdock shows up. I I found a connection between Murdoch and Banner, like why he would be calling Banner, Banner would be calling Murdoch. I don't know. It seems kind of silly that he's using Murdoch sort of as his, not his parole officer, but you know, I don't know. It's a bit weird that he would trust Murdoch. But anyways, other than that, I mean the action. I really love the scene where Maria Hill tricked Banner. I'm laughing in that.
Well, they have a relationship. They were both in that TV movie together. So it only makes sense.
He was his
lawyer back then. So
that's right.
They've had a relationship for a long time.
And was the trial of the Incredible Hulk the one that Thor showed up in?
No, that was the one that Daredevil showed up.
Okay. Anyways, I enjoyed the art. It's a bit dirty, gritty, sort of. I guess it's a good fit for this book. I don't know. I'm not blown away by the art, but it was good. It's definitely better than Simonson. The story, Mark Waid, is really, you can tell now, like you guys were mentioning, it probably was an editorial mandated thing, that three-parter before. This is Mark Waid getting back into it. Like, he's got his hands deep into what he wants to do with the Hulk, which is fun, and you can see that. It comes out on the page. The bar fight scene, I thought was awesome. I really liked the part. I liked it, but I also didn't like it because then you sort of realize that Hulk is back to being with childlike mentality. Where when they did that underwater escapade that Lionel Yu was drawing, he seemed a little bit smarter than that. In any case, you know, he's shooting the sonic gun at the Hulk, and the Hulk is like, "Too loud! Stop! Loud! Stop!" You know, it was cool, but I don't necessarily care for the childlike Hulk. Other than that, yeah, that final panel, that final page is awesome. Looking forward to seeing what's coming up next. So, all in all, it's nice to see Hulk back on track. So I guess I'll throw that over to Speech now.
Yay! Alright, I thought it was, you know, to echo what you just said, it's pretty much back on track now, because we know for a while the series got a little boring. But I really disagree with you about the whole childlike Hulk thing. I saw it as, with the sonic gun, they said they underestimated it. It just drove him to a point where he was a little bit more bestial, which is why Murdoch couldn't, I guess, calm him down at that point, because he was just highly pissed off and he wasn't at, I guess, his state of normal angry. And I also see it as kind of a smart move for Banner to use Matt Murdoch, being that he is a lawyer. So, I mean, even if he has to hit up for, on the legality sense, if S.H.I.E.L.D. tries to screw him, and Murdoch is like the perfect lie detector as well. Because at first, in the shadow, I thought it was Doc Samson, and I was just going to stop reading the book and just say it sucks and give it a one. Because if it was Doc Samson, that just would have just been corny as hell. I hate that guy. But all in all, art-wise, it is pretty much a giant leap forward than, unfortunately, what Simonson was doing before. And the book is actually fun now so far. So hopefully Waid can keep this going, because I would like to add another Hulk book to my pull list again, and not have to keep chopping it off every now and again. So that's all I have to say about that. All
right, let's rate it.
I give Indestructible Hulk number 9 a solid 8.
I'll give it an 8.
I give it a 7.5.
I give it a 7.5 as well.
Alright, up next is my pick, and this time I picked Extinction Parade number 1. The best-selling zombie writer in history. Okay.
Really?
This one isn't Comixology. This is straight from Avatar, but whatever. He unleashes his all-new epic for comics. Be ready for the event that zombie fans have been looking for, which is Extinction Parade. There's way too much stuff here. Blah 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 blah. Let's just say it's zombies meet vampires in a human world. And we'll end it at that. Art written by Max Brooks. Art by Rallo Casares. And if I killed that, I don't care. Okay, so here's the deal. I've been looking forward to this for a while. I've never read anything by Brooks because he's never done comics before. He's only done books and stuff like that, and I could care less if you want to write a book that tells me how to survive fake shit. So I really don't care. That's like telling me how I'm gonna survive on the Star Trek Enterprise. I really don't give a shit, right? So anyways, with this, I was looking forward to it because I really like the concept, and I think that it's really cool that, you know, if it is a world full of monsters, you know, why aren't the zombies going after the vampires and everything? But there is a real big drawback to this, and that is the fact that he hasn't written comics before. Because the only thing this comes across as is a novel with a lot of pictures. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying there's a lot to read here. There's a lot to take in. And to me, it was all build. It was all, let's get ready for what's to come. So maybe it should have been a zero issue or something like that. But it definitely, it had enough at the end to grab you, to bring you back. But it doesn't have enough throughout the whole thing to probably keep a lot of people interested in what's going on, because there really wasn't much. It was just, yeah, you know, we can drive down this street in this car. Why can't we fly? Because I got a new toy, and let's do this, and let's do that. But then you do get these cool scenes where, you know, there are humans still fighting the vampires, and I really enjoy that kind of stuff. But like I said, then you just get all this stuff that felt unnecessary, but he was just trying to build the story so much. So my hat really goes off more to the artist on this one. I thought Casares did an amazing job. I really loved the way that everything looked here. It's a typical looking Avatar book where I think the colors are a little too over accentuated, but artwork I enjoy. And like I said, I really love this concept, so I really want to enjoy this book. It's got to find a better pace. Other than, like I said, the way I read it, it comes off as that I'm reading a novel, and that's not what I want in a comic book. So, you know, maybe down the line, hopefully, it kind of weighs itself out better. But for now, that's what it is. So, not horrible, not too great, but I enjoyed it. So I will give it the speech.
All right, just to make a mild correction, Max Brooks did do a series called Of Hearts and Minds. It was a G.I. Joe series. And I remember reading, I think the issue I read had featured major blood and chuckles, and it was actually rather strong and good, despite that even the artist wasn't one of my top picks. So I kind of expected more when I opened this up, and kind of like you said, it's pretty much a novel with a lot of pictures, because that's just how it reads. But it did look better than how it flowed out. But cool points go to the fact that I'm intrigued by the whole vampire zombie thing. Like, you have the one lady, she's like jumping in front of the zombie, and he's pretty much just trying to like push past her, not trying to bite her or attack her. He's just like, you know, get out of my way, bitch. There's a human over there, and I'm going to go bite him. You know, and she keeps, you know, and it kind of strikes her funny, and I just want to know more, like, are they bothered by it? What's the big overall point of the book? Because the introductions were kind of vague. Like you said, it did feel more of a zero issue, because you really didn't get that much of characterization other than there's some flirting going on. We have three vampires, scared-ass humans, and a lot of zombies taking over the Earth. And there was just issues with, I say it was slow to the point where at times it was like, okay, just hurry up. I just want to turn the page and maybe something will happen. Okay, I turn the page and they're flying, yay. But I am intrigued. I want to see where it goes. But if it keeps on like this, if this is how the book is going to be, then I'd much rather read it after in one huge chunk. So hopefully, maybe in a collected series, it would flow a lot better for me. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Spider-Man Geek. I'm sure he has some praise for this one.
Oh, no, I don't.
Let her rip.
You know, I was, I don't want to say I was excited, but I was kind of looking forward to getting into this. I also have never read anything from Max Brooks. But of course, with the movie coming out and The Zombie Survival Guide and World War Z were popular books. I've seen a lot of people read them. You know, and this starts off wordy, and it continues to be wordy, and then it gets wordier, and by the end, there's a bunch of words. It took me a while to situate myself. I mean, yes, I look, you know, I saw the cover. You can obviously tell that it's a vampire. But, you know, kind of putting that aside, if you're just getting into from the first page, it really took me a while to understand who was narrating this and what they were. The terminology that is used in here, I had a bit of a problem with. There's some words, and I later Googled this to find out that they are references to stuff that was in the Zombie Survival Guide and perhaps even World War Z. And that's when I found out that Extinction Parade was actually a short story that Max Brooks wrote about 2 to 3 years ago. So it was originally written as a short story with no pictures. And then it all became clear. So you know, Max Brooks basically just took that short story, kind of tweaked it a bit to be able to add for an artist to add some panels to it, and this is the result. It still very much reads like a book. So I think that's the misleading part for any comic book fan that might pick this up, is don't expect to read it as a comic book. It really is. As Dan mentioned, this is a book with a lot of pictures. If you can go into it knowing that, you might be able to enjoy it a bit, because there's a difference between reading a book and reading a comic book, just in the way it's presented. So basically the thing here is the zombie apocalypse from the perspective of vampires. So it's vampires versus zombie, essentially. Once you figure out that that's what's going on, the concept is intriguing. It is intriguing. I, you know, also had a problem with we're just taking this car because she loves her toys. Of course, it makes sense. Vampires, you know, being hundreds of years old, they're probably slightly bored, you know. So, yeah, I would turn to toys as well. I mean, they've been flying around for hundreds of years. Might as well use a car once in a while and do it in style, you know. I don't know. The real scene, it feels like the entire issue here really is just to set up the fact that zombies pay no attention to vampires. I don't know what that's going to lead into later on in the further issues, but it was a funny scene where the vampire lady realizes that zombies just want nothing to do with vampires. So that's all I got out of it. The art was okay for me, but it's typical horror book art, which I'm not that big of a fan of. So over to you, Jeff.
I think you guys pretty much covered it. You know, I just think somebody needs to tell Max Brooks that, you know, when you adapt a short story to a comic book, you need to let the artist tell a little bit of the story instead of just overlaying paragraphs of the short story into the art and just kind of. You know, basically all the artist is doing is just laying down a background, a setting for this place, but he's not doing any visual storytelling at all. I had a hard time too following who was narrating this. I don't know why, but for some reason I thought it was the blonde haired dude. So I just had a lot of trouble with this. I think that what's his name, Raulo Sequeiros. I think he needs to continue working. I don't think his work is awful, but I don't think it has quite hit a stride that at least I'm comfortable looking at. That really has more to do with there's kind of a stiffness with the expressions on people's faces. It just doesn't feel like he's settled into kind of a comfort in terms of individual faces. So, but the idea of vampires versus zombies. Okay, cool. Great. Sounds interesting. That's all I gotta say.
Alright, well let's go ahead and rate it. I'm gonna give Extinction Parade number 1 a 7.
I'll give it a 6.5.
I give it a 5.
I'll give it a 4.5.
All right, our last book this week is Fanboys vs. Zombies, number 15. Nothing interesting is going to happen. Written by... All right, the vampire strikes back, trapped on a space station with a bunch of wimpy scientists and one rogue zombie. The Wrecking Crew is faced with an intriguing new challenge. Instead of destroying Earth zombies, can they cure them? Find out the secrets that stretch all the way back to FVZ number 1. Written by Shane Houghton, art by Jerry Gaylord.
Is that it?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and so, Power Pack is going to be in court.
Nice.
All right. So, I was actually shocked at myself for picking this, but I wanted to challenge myself since I forgot who it was that picked this the first time and we read it. And I hated it, and I was told I was being too harsh on it, so I read issues 2 and 3, and at that point, being thoroughly bored and having to try over and over again to actually finish an issue, I just stopped. So I figured, hey, what the hell? Challenge yourself. See if it got any better, because, again, I keep hearing how good it's become from various people, so I figured, all right, give it a shot. So I picked it. It's kind of a blind pick. I just read a couple pages, said, ah, well, I'll pick it for the show. It looked fun. The Ripley-esque character, she intrigued me. That was funny. I mean, I like all the little nods to stuff I already like, but if your only selling point is to catch me on my nostalgia strings, then you pretty much don't have much of a story to tell. And that's where I feel a lot of readers get caught up, and I think the people who were praising the book praise it because it's written by people who are probably around the same age as me or know the same funny geek shit I do, and they pepper the story throughout. And it's cleverly put in, I'll add that, but I think people are getting caught up on the whole the nostalgia thing. Oh, they threw a joke about aliens. Ah, she looks like Ripley. Ah, she said a quote from Star Wars. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah, when it comes down to it, I was still bored by the end. I mean, it was entertaining, but it's nothing I would pretty much add on my pull list to get every month, and to everyone who was telling me the book had got better, I owe you a throat punch when I see you. So, like I said, the book does look fun. I mean, I love the fun style, I love the art, and that's about it if I just wanted a silent issue. But unfortunately, there are words in this book, so I'm just going to go ahead and pass it on.
All right. You know, I read the last couple of issues, so, you know, 13 and 14. I rather enjoy them. I like the art. I think it's a pretty book. It's a style of art that the art conveys that you shouldn't take this book too seriously. So right there should be your indicator that you know, don't take it seriously. It's fun. It's a love letter to a lot of those horror movies. So there's a lot of nods to that sci-fi horror stuff. You have all your typical characters in here. You know, they're kind of fun. They're generic, but they're fun. The Amanda chick is I kind of like her. I kind of like the Amanda chick. She's funny. She's the go-getter. She wants to kill the zombies. The concept that I like so far in here, and I don't know if I don't remember ever seeing this ever in any movies or texts or comic book, is that they've actually found a cure for zombieism. Of course, that doesn't mean that it'll solve all your problems, but as we see, as is evident in this near the final panels of this issue, but I kind of like that concept that they're out in space, they were working on this, and they finally found a cure for the zombies. I'm sitting here waiting for the other shoe to drop, though, you know, as to possible side effects of that. Of course, we might not end up finding out, considering how this book, this issue here ended. Otherwise, I thought it was entertaining. It's a light read. You don't have to invest too much of your mental power into it. So it was just fun. So over to you, Jeff.
I like this book. I like the concept of the fact that there was a cure and it was out in space and they wanted to cure the guy's brother, and so they ended up having to, you know, shuttle to space, and so here they are locked in a in a spaceship with a zombie. I mean, I just think that I didn't read those issues. This is the first issue of this I've ever read, but I think that's just a fun. I mean, I don't know if it turned out to be fun, but I think the idea itself sounds pretty funny, and you know, sounds like a good concept for a zombie book. Like y'all said, the art is the kind of art I like, so I was really drawn into that. I was not surprised to see that the designs of these characters is not just by Gaylord, but also by Humberto Ramos. So
he's that, Gamos for Ramos.
He is. sounds like it. So
you.
So yeah.
You.
Oh yeah, I am. Yes. Okay. Sure. So anyway, yeah, I thought this was just a fun book. I didn't expect much going in. I actually expected it to be a lot worse, so I guess that's why I ended up enjoying it. And I thought the twist at the end was interesting. I mean, I'm kind of interested to see how they're gonna, you know, go forward with that. So considering there was so much kind of emotional buildup with this guy getting cured and all this stuff. So I'm interested to see what's going on. I may pick up the next issue.
My two favorite things are horror comics and comedy comics. Not comic strips, but comedy comics. Yet this can't deliver on either level. This is, oh my god, I haven't read anything since the first issue, and that was bad. But my god, I wanted to shoot myself reading this. I was like, jeez. And I didn't pick up anything. Probably because I thought every single page was just dumber than the last page. I mean, really? Really? We're in space. Alright, now hold on, everybody. We gotta have a three-way scene. The stump's gonna be involved in some way or shape or form, but come on. Really? Really? The one fat guy dies, so we got that out of the way. So now all we have left are everybody in shape and, you know, it. Oh my god. I don't want to say anymore because this was horrible. How has this made 15 issues?
I'm glad I'm not alone.
How has this made 15 issues? This is canceled after 2 issues. Come on. If anything, it's a mini series. Oh my. I just
that's what I thought it was going to be when it first started.
Yet it keeps going, and like you said, I mean, if you're picking up all these references to all these movies and everything else in between, you're gonna run out of movies soon, or you're just repeating yourself at this point. But don't worry, because if we look at it right, in its mini series, this is number 4, and now we're in space. So whatever. I'm done. We can rate it.
All right, I'm gonna give it a 3.5.
Wow. I had fun with it, so I'm gonna give it a 7.
I too was thinking 7.
I will give it a 2. All right, backups. Speech, you're technically first.
Well, my backup was one of our picks, which was Ultimate Spider-Man. So you guys already chatted enough about that. I'm sure there was much praise for it because it was almost a damn near perfect issue. And David Marquez is my new number one favorite artist. The guy can do no wrong. So I'm just going to pass it on.
Backups. I like Superior Spider-Man number 12.
Sorry, I had something in my throat. I had to... It's a spider crawled down in my throat.
Uh-huh. It was enjoyable. Yes, of course. I thought it was enjoyable, but the book I really liked this week was Star Wars Darth Vader and the Ninth Assassin number 3. It continues to be a great series. It's fun to root for Darth Vader, and of course the art is fantastic. So looking forward to, I think this is a 5-issue miniseries, so I'm looking forward to the conclusion of this coming up in the next 2 issues. Aside from that, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I would say that's it for this week.
All right, my 2 backup picks. One was Uncanny Avengers number 9. I really liked. I just like the tension that's building in the team. Remender is great at kind of building conflict within a team. So the fact that Wolverine's involvement in killing the Kid Apocalypse is now come to light, and all the Avengers, well, most of the Avengers are now, you know, second guessing this whole, you know, whether or not the X-Men and the Avengers can actually team up. I think that's just fun. I like that idea. My other one is Doctor Who number 10, a great continuation of the story that we covered last month when I was on the show. And the interesting twist is that they find out that they're actually the whole thing is inside the TARDIS, the plane, everything. So that's just
spoiler alert. Thank you. You should have read it.
Yeah. You should have read it. Yeah, I'm not gonna apologize.
It's Tuesday, buddy. You had a week.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a busy man.
You just don't. So those are my two backups.
I got three this week. BPRD Hell on Earth 108. This is quickly flying up my list of the best comic book in print. I could not believe how creepy this issue was. It took that last issue and it really upped it. Fall of the House of Usher number 2. We can just say Corbin is the man, because that was freaking amazing. It's so beautiful just to look at his artwork. The only thing I can say is Poe still sucks, but Corbin really made it entertaining. So great 2-issue mini. The last one, Six Gun number 32. Series is fantastic, and I really wish I could keep up with it better than I have been. But the last 2 issues are fantastic, and it's just such a solid series. So those are my backups. Stay away from.
I wish I would have picked up Six Gun. Why didn't you remind me?
I'm reminding you.
Well, at least you didn't spoil it like someone did.
There's nothing to really spoil. I mean, it just moves the story along.
They all die.
They all die.
Jeff, we're going to have some words after the call ends, okay? I mean, after the show ends, okay?
All right. You going to cry some more? I'll hold you.
Oh, I hate you.
No, you don't.
You're right. I don't have a backup pick because I didn't read anything that sucked other than my pick. So if it can be my pick and my stay away from, I would say stay as far away from Fanboys versus Zombies as possible.
You didn't read any books last week?
I did. And the books that I did like, I read, I liked them. So, you know, sorry.
He's moving. Give him a break.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, that too. And remember, I trim my pull list a lot because if books start to suck, I drop them.
Right.
Unless you guys make me read a book that's horrible. But yeah, Fanboys versus Zombie, stay away from it. Don't believe your friends. They're just caught up in the nostalgia factor. It's a trap.
It's a tarp. my only stay away from is Evil Ernie number 6. Didn't like it.
You read an Evil Ernie book, and you read at a random number 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
On purpose?
On purpose.
You lose a bet with the wife or something?
No.
That is strange.
I had never read Evil Ernie at all, and I just was curious to see what it was all about.
Why would you read a series written by the son of Twisted Sister's lead singer?
Oh, yeah, I automatically knew that. I knew that Jesse Snyder is the son of some hair band from 1989.
Every...
5, 6, 86, 7,
oh my
4,
God.
I don't know.
It just keeps going. Oh, okay.
Even after, take it.
Anyways, all right. That was good. I like that speech. That was good.
Is that it, Dan?
Yeah.
So, stay away from Age of Ultron number 10. What the heck was that series about? Just now we've got Crisis on Infinite Earths in the Marvel Universe, and it's stupid, and oh my gosh, horrible. Superior Spider-Man number 12, until Cam and Coley gets off this book. This book is dead to me. And X-Factor 258. It's just sad to watch Peter David just kind of just crash and burn. I mean, this is so bad.
I didn't read it yet. Not even John Maddox could save this issue.
No. You can read my review on the next X-Piles.
It was poor. Oof.
All right.
You know, and I really do. I owe you an apology about Age of Ultron. I know I sat there and fought for the dignity of this book, how awesome it was going to be, and then it just laid down the crapper. And I was like, Jeff, you're wrong. This book is going to be awesome. The whole thing is going to be awesome. And now, like Dan, I must eat a lot of pro right about now.
I had read issue one, and I'm like, nope.
Yeah, I wish I had done that. I wish, because this. It just didn't. I just don't know what they were even trying to do here. It's crazy.
I'd rather we just. Can I get like a mind wipe?
A mulligan.
Could maybe, you know, past Wolverine come back and stab you in the throat?
But see, the funny thing is, you need a mind wipe from Fear itself. You need a mind wipe from all that other crap. So it is what it is.
Fear itself was decent. It was a spinoff that sucked.
Alright, my stay away from this week is going to be X-Files number one. Here's the thing, guys. The show ended in 2002. That's 11 years ago. The last movie came out in 2008. It wasn't even needed. There was no need for that movie. So it really all comes down to this comic book was so good, except it involved these characters. They should have called this Jack and Jill Run Down the Fucking Hill from a Monster. because it wouldn't...
I would read that book.
It wouldn't have mattered because you wouldn't have had Mulder and Scully in it. And it would have been amazing. But they're trying to say, hey, remember 11 years ago? You're going to need to remember...
Are they taking it way back there?
Yeah, you would have to remember... it takes place like now, like, oh, they've been in protection and they're hiding for years. But that's my point. You still have to not only remember them, you have to remember everyone else. So, I mean, that, you know... So they're the easy ones to remember, but that's my point. If this would have been written where it was just Jack and Jill and here's some monsters to fight, I would have had this as my pick in a heartbeat. But the fact that it's so inaccessible to anyone who doesn't remember where they were 11 years ago, that's sad. That's real sad. And
the truth is out there.
The truth is, don't read this fucking book. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for this week. As always, we thank everybody at TMV Cafe, Underground Video Network, Drive Through Comics, ComicRelated.com, and ComicTech.net. And check out everything we do at ComicTech.net. From trips to reviews to news to manga to movies to articles to other podcasts, New Monsters of Metal is coming July 1st. And as Jeff likes to put it, that's about it. So, that's going to do it for this week. Have a good week, folks. You have a few days to go and listen to 9 hours of Monsters and Metal. And Dan's already playing the music. So have a good week and don't lose your heads.